esto de lunes a jueves. You
are the Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? I think not. So this Lena Dunham says she overheard two American Airlines flight attendants speaking transphobically, and Dunham felt it was her duty to report them to the airline. American Airlines disputes Dunham's claim, saying the timestamps of her allegations don't add up. The airline says they are unable to substantiate the claims made by Dunham. Dunham tweeted at around 3 a.m. Eastern, and the airline spokesperson says when America's last departure arrival at JFK, it was around 1:45 a.m. And a video that Dunham posted around the same time showed Lena was flying on Delta Airlines, which doesn't operate out of the same terminal as American. The two are not even connected. Looks like Lena might have been fibbing. Dunham admonished the airline, striking back, saying that,
"At this moment in history, we should be teaching our employees about love and inclusivity."
Check Dunham's pedantic word choice, gang. The imperial we. And now, beyond being a hack writer of unwatchable shows, she's a fucking teacher. She's giving the airline their curriculum and marching orders. Ooh. Dunham later contacted the airline via direct message on Twitter, explaining,
"I heard two female attendants walking, talking about how trans kids are a trend and they'd never accept a trans child, and transness is gross. I think it reflects badly on uniformed employees of your company to have that kind of dialogue going on. What if a trans team was walking behind them? Awareness starts at home, but jobs can set standards of practice."
And in Janet Reno fashion, the mass-murdering, alcoholic, public servant sack of shit, responsible for the single darkest day in all of American history, just like sack-o-shit Janet, Lena invokes the children to wrap herself in cover.
What if a teen was walking behind them?
Because who doesn't want to protect the children? So much is wrong with this story on every level, yet most of the controversy swirls around the least important part of the story, whether or not Dunham fabricated it. This show has many enormously talented listeners, and one of them has come up with a device that not only can eavesdrop on anyone's thoughts, it can dig into a person's memory banks and retrieve a file, just like your laptop. And so he tuned in to Lena Dunham to find out just what the fuck she was thinking and sent me the audio file from Lena's mind. And here it is, friends. Is it accurate or whimsical? You be the judge. Let's listen.
"I am so bored. And I've sent out a shitload of tweets and I'm barely getting 22 retweets per tweet. That Kardashian bitch makes me look bad. My platform is sinking. I don't have a show on TV. I just gotta get my name out there again. Let's see. I already said I'd move to Canada if Hillary lost. Already said I molested my one-year-old sister. Already falsely accused a guy of rape. What can I do? I got it. I'll do some virtue signaling. Look at those two trim flight attendants over there who actually work for a living and probably have boyfriends they don't have to pay. I hate them. So, even though I'm 20 yards from them and have no idea what they're talking about, I'll say they're having a nasty transphobic conversation and tweet it to the airlines. Even though I'm flying in other airlines, so that'll disguise this little scheme, and they'll never figure it out because I was named one of the world's most 100 influential people by Time Magazine 4 years ago. I can say whatever the fuck I want to say. I'm a progressive icon. Well, here goes.
Lena's probably quite wealthy. If she's so concerned about the transgendered, where's the Lena Dunham Foundation for the transgendered? What is she doing actively to assist the group about which she claims to care so deeply? How many checks has she written for them, and in what amount? I wonder. If she did hear two flight attendants expressing an opinion she may not share but to which they are nonetheless entitled, Lena would rather tap her fucking phone and try to get somebody fired. Because we now live on Planet Snitch, where to be accused is to be guilty. And if you want to point the finger and do it with impunity and render yourself impervious to backlash, just say you're protecting the children. Most people have become so afraid of saying anything controversial, they wait until behind closed doors and after turning off Google or Alexa and sweeping the room for bugs. Scary, but kind of true, isn't it? There's an interesting documentary on Netflix about a woman who was raised in East Germany while it was still under the communist regime, which at that time called itself the German Democratic Republic. How classic of a commie regime to incorporate two of the strongest words in a free society into its bullshit name. In the GDR, the snitching and surveillance reached levels that boggle the mind. There was one full-time Stasi agent, that was the secret police. One full-time agent for every 166 people. And when you factored in police informants, there was either a cop or an informant for every 6.6 citizens. Let that sink in. Every citizen was under constant surveillance 24/7. By contrast, Hitler's Gestapo was nothing, with a government spy for only every 2,000 people. And yet, is it a stretch to posit that in the United States, right now, we are any less spied upon, surveilled, and snitched on than East Germany during the Cold War? Hardly. Everybody has a cell phone with many gigs of memory and the ability to instantaneously upload video or audio to any site or entity. Are we becoming a nation of Lena Dunhams? Someone doesn't like what you say or the way you say it, and presto, you're on some government watch list, or maybe out of a job. Innocence before proof of guilt is an antiquated concept in these times. Now again, those East German police, the Stasi, were mostly concerned with keeping people frightened and compliant. And they operated in a way that they pretty much pioneered. And while the Gestapo and the KGB, they used strong-arm tactics like torture and murder, those methods left ugly and verifiable proof of their hideous actions. But those East Germans, they came up with a new way to control the masses, something they called Zersetzung. Zersetzung. Literal translation means to degrade or corrode. According to Wikipedia, by the 1970s, the Stasi realized that psychological harassment was far less likely to be recognized for what it was, so its victims were less likely to be provoked into resistance. Zersetzung was designed to sidetrack and, quote, switch off, unquote. Think about that phrase, switch off, because we're going to circle back to it in a moment. They would switch off enemies so that they would lose the will to continue any, quote, inappropriate, unquote, activities. There it is, the fucking word that invariably is a red flag that you are dealing with a manipulative, cowardly, and politically correct scumbag. The I word, inappropriate. There are no mysteries. The finger-shaming bullshit, the rally cry of PC pissants always begins with inappropriate, doesn't it? And now we know its origins from the fucking East German secret police. It's killed comedy. It's killing free thought and speech. and it's usually used in conjunction with the other word they love to scream, offensive. Zersatzung tactics involve the disruption of your private or family life, including psychological attacks like breaking into your house and subtly manipulating the contents, kind of a form of gaslighting, moving furniture, altering the timing of an alarm, removing pictures from the walls. Hey, baby, why is there a picture of Karl Marx where your sister used to be? Other Zersatzung practices included property damage, sabotage of cars, purposely incorrect medical treatment. Government health care certainly opens up that door pretty wide, doesn't it? Zersatzung used smear campaigns, including sending falsified, compromising photos or documents to the victim's family. Whoa, doxing! These Stasi douchebags invented doxing. Usually, victims had no idea that the Stasi were responsible. Many thought they were just losing their minds, and mental breakdowns and sometimes suicides resulted. One big advantage of Zersatzung harassment was that it could be plausibly denied. Don't you love the verbiage of the liar? Plausible deniability. First time I heard that one was with a scumbag exec I worked with. He had just rat-fucked somebody and ran his lie by me to see if I thought it would be swallowed. I told him to pass it by the guy he just screwed and see if he bought it. So you listen to this sick, sick shit of East Germany and think, what a fucking hellhole. What kind of twisted filth thinks of this stuff? But really, are we not living it now? Once upon a time, snitches were reviled as garbage, human filth. Now they're celebrated and model citizens. The most famous and loathed snitch of all time, Judas Iscariot's very name became synonymous with snitching and betrayal. 2,000 years later and halfway around the world, and Judas would still be hailed as a hero. After all, the guy he ratted out was kinda anti-government, wasn't he? I mean, he paid his taxes and committed no crime, but still, he wasn't carrying anybody's flags. He wasn't real big on groupthink, and that's kinda subversive. And nothing has changed in 2,000 years because governments still pay all sorts of rewards to snitchers. The IRS pays 15 to 30% to, quote, whistleblowers, unquote. Again, the verbiage, a whistleblower, could be some wind warbler blowing a happy tune. Sounds so much nicer than snitch or betrayer or informant or stool pigeon, doesn't it? But maybe whistleblower is the more apt descriptor because some of those snitch rewards can go as high as 10 million bucks. That's a hell of a motivator. And it's not just the IRS. Loads of other government agencies are handing out big bucks. The DEA, the Post Office, SEC, BATF. Hey, I'm running out of letters here. Some guy actually has a book out about how to be a whistleblower and get rich. There's even a National Whistleblowers Day. Guess we should all get whistles and stand up on our rooftops and blow. Back in 2012, somebody scored themselves a $96 million payout for ratting out a drug company, GlaxoSmithKline. Didn't seem to bother Glaxo. It's still a powerhouse on the New York Stock Exchange. Last year, they made $19 billion profit on revenues of $28 billion. Hey, does your business have a 68% margin? Holy shit, that deserves a whistle right there. And the snitching isn't just on the outside. It's happening and encouraged in the workplace. Google is embroiled in a lawsuit that alleges they run an internal employee spy network and that they encourage snitching. Time Incorporated's offices are plastered with posters encouraging employees to tattle on others who misbehave. The poster says, "Our integrity starts with you. One quick anonymous phone call keeps Time Inc. the workplace you deserve." You think those posters are hanging in the corner offices? I bet they aren't. One of the most hideous constructs of our fucked society is TOS, Terms of Service, especially as it relates to snitching. and a violation of those terms of service, often in response to somebody complaining or snitching, may result in your account being locked or blocked or deleted, right? Again, Stasi had that going way before Facebook or Twitter. Stasi said they would switch off citizens they found inappropriate. Really, I just can't get over the similarities between Stasi verbiage and tactics from decades ago and what we now regard as acceptable protocols. When's the last time you read, in full or even partially, the terms of service before you created a social media account or downloaded software? How about never? Who the fuck would have time? Twitter's are more than 5,000 words. Facebook's is over 3,500. And those terms of service are written with sufficient elasticity so they can bounce your ass just because they fucking feel like it. Same thing with airlines. Their so-called contract of carriage. You love that? That's the one they claim gives them the right to remove you from a flight and beat the shit out of you if you complain about it. All these terms of service are written for one purpose: to deprive you of your rights and your recourse. Here's a dojo tip. Terms of service is a euphemism for a contract. And as you go through life, whenever somebody shoves a contract and a pen in your face, run away from that asshole. Because the guy who offers you a contract is never, ever doing that for your benefit. It's for his. Just ask the hundreds of musicians fucked over by recording company contracts, from the Stones to the Beatles to Chief Keef. I have a couple of ideas for terms of service. Any online outfit that cannot articulate their terms of service in 100 words or less forfeits the right to post terms of service. Or if it runs over 100 words, maybe we have the right to counter with our terms of service. Whenever involved in a conflict with some entity, from a gigantic phone company to even a smaller company, the wonks on the phone, when beaten to a standstill by logic, invariably resort to,
"Well, our policy is."
And I always reply with, "Well, my policy is." And that always throws them. As if only corporations can have policies. But most people shrug and go, "Ooh, a policy. That sounds so official. Guess I better comply." But just think for a moment how we really all do now live in a society not all that different from that of East Germany in the mid-20th century. We all have two lives now, real time and internet, and the digital giants wield unchallenged power to switch us off if they don't like us or disagree with our beliefs. And in the worst case scenarios, they can, just like the government, switch off our incomes if they are derived through any internet portal or platform. It's fucking scary. And as the consolidation continues, competition diminishes, as does our choices and our freedom. Think AT&T buying Time Warner is a good thing? It isn't. Now don't get me wrong, not all informing is a bad thing. Plenty of it has done a lot of good. Car companies and drug companies and tobacco companies knowingly making products that kill people. And there have been whistleblowers within vast government agencies that have done good things. But what we are now besieged by are snitches motivated by the wrong reasons. And one that is growing alarmingly commonplace are those who rat someone out for the sole purpose of creating drama in their empty, worthless lives. People who have nothing going on, and so they see an opportunity to make themselves a hero and step into the spotlight for some applause and attaboys. Those assholes generally voice suspicions of spousal abuse or maybe child abuse, and they make these suspicions known to schools or law enforcement. And in our current safe-not-sorry culture, cops and school officials are mandated by law to act on these reports instantaneously without investigation of the drama-seeking fuckball making the allegations. And so husbands spend nights in jail, and terrified children are ripped from homes and placed in foster care while authority figures sort things out. This is fucked. And happy, untroubled families become victims, ensnared in the unstoppable and almighty bureaucracy, simply because of some sick asshole who wanted to stir up some drama and trouble. The phony informants know full well that the only risk to them is being wrong. And their position is always,
"Oops, I was just trying to be helpful. Better safe than sorry."
The knee-jerk reaction by government is wrong. They need to investigate informants before they start carting guys off to jail and kids off to foster care. And then, when that claim is proven false, there needs to be consequences, like some big fucking fine, or how about an Adirondack bat to the back of the head? Better safe than sorry? Fuck that noise. Way too many people are winding up sorry for no good reason, and snitching shitbags are getting all the drama they crave in their empty lives as they damage and ruin others. Tony Spumante and associates live by the code of omerta, the Cosa Nostra code of silence and non-cooperation with government. It's got a fascinating etymology, actually derived from a Spanish word, hombredad, which means manliness. Well, of course, in Sicily, allegations of being a cachetuni, an informant, is the greatest insult to one's manhood. And that's pretty true, isn't it? Is there a worse crime than betraying a trust? And while it is reviled in mafia prosecutions, it is revered in military operations, isn't it? The Nazi interrogation is a staple of every war movie. Sergeant Rock is strapped to a chair, and Colonel Spitzbogen has been grilling him for hours under that glaring bulb with a metal cone shade.
"For the last time, Sergeant, what is the position of your artillery?"
And Sergeant Rock, whose face is already bloody and swollen, answers,
All right, I'll tell you. The artillery is located..."
A triumphant Spitzbergen leans in close to hear.
"Yeah, the artillery is located in the woods."
Spitzbergen's face goes full on psycho as he viciously backhands Sergeant Rock and screams,
"Liar!"
Sergeant Rock runs his tongue around his mouth, spits out a tooth on the floor. And we love Sergeant Rock because he ain't no cachetuni, no stoolie, no snitch. Are there guys like that still around? Don't we hope so? When I was just a 7-year-old attending the gloomiest school this side of East Germany, I witnessed an object lesson in snitching and dealing with snitches. The school was like a stalag, heavy emphasis on discipline. Fun was almost illegal. So we had to find it where we could. And one of the best places was recess. They had these enormous bathrooms, and we'd go in there and turn on a faucet and stick a thumb in it, enabling us to create a small water cannon and spray anyone not smart enough to see it coming or fast enough to get out of the way. And these little water battles would go on for a minute or two until the Pavlovian bell rang, signaling it was time to get back to the classroom with the San Quentin ambiance. The water fights in the can were a much-needed piece of harmless hilarity. And sooner or later, most everyone got a little spritz, and so what? It was water, not acid. And one day, this little shit, James was his name, he always looked like he was eating lemons, a permanent puckered scowl on his puke boy face. He looked a lot like Adam Lanza, that creep who shot up Sandy Hook School a few years back. Since I saw Adam's shitty face, I've been trying to understand why it looked so familiar, and now I just flashed on it. Jamesy, the stool pigeon from my second grade class. One day, Jamesy got a little sprayed and zipped out and squealed on us to the nun. And there was a shitstorm. Our faces were slapped and detention was done and knuckles were wrapped with the sharp edge of a ruler. But that wasn't the worst of it. It was the end of our recess fun. Now everyone just had to take a leak and get back to more gloom. And so a plan was hatched by a kid who was, Sicilian of course, Tommy Battaglia. And it was not implemented for several weeks because revenge is a dish best served cold and wet. In this bathroom, for whatever reason, the urinals were built to accommodate giants, deep and wide and ancient, cracked and marbled porcelain. As a 7-year-old, I had to reach up to grab the flush handle. And our largest classmate, George House McDonald, who at age 7 probably weighed in at 150, was selected to be point man on our little mission of retribution. And so on the appointed day, with Delta Force precision, just as little Rat Fink Jamesy stepped up to that urinal, somebody pulled a canvas bag over his head as House McDonald body slammed and pinned Jamesy into that urinal as the flush lever was pulled repeatedly. Once James was as soaked as if he'd been swimming, everyone vanished from the bathroom. Was I part of that conspiracy? Who do you think was pulling that flush lever? That happened a long time ago. And not only have I no regrets, I still carry a bit of pride in our accomplishment. Nobody got injured. Nobody got hurt. And a clear message was sent to any potential tattletales. And oddly, there were no repercussions from that incident with Jamesy. Did he wise up and keep his mouth shut? Or did even the nuns have no respect for squealers? I guess we'll never know. Hey, thanks for hanging with me again, everyone. If you missed last week's bonus episode, Decoding Chick Speak, you can access it anytime, or any of our growing catalog of bonus episodes and life hacks from the dojo. Just slide over to thatlarryshow.com and click that Patreon button. If you've not ordered your official Take No Shit Dojo t-shirt yet, why wait? They put the world on notice that you are someone to be reckoned with. Check them out. So have you got a problem? Send it to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. We've got a sensei here who can help you out. Follow the show on Twitter at thatlarryshow. And here's some major news. Tony Spamante now has his own Twitter account and he is tweeting some outrageous shit. At Tony Spamante, that's TonySpumonte. Better follow him now before the Stasi switches him off. And so, my friends, as you make your way through this snitch-filled world, be aware. Keep your cards and cell phone close to your vest. Never give out a password. And if somebody snitches on you, drown them in a urinal. I'll see you next Tuesday, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, take no shit.